Mike has been holding down the groove as a first call session bass player for over 40 years. Mike's career journey started in his soulful hometown of Memphis. He then hit the road with Christian Axe, DeGarmo and Key, and Amy Grant before becoming a founding member of the rock band Giant and eventually planting his bass in Nashville's country music session scene. We could list the artists that Mike has served over the years, but it would be a lot easier to say that if an act recorded in Nashville in the past four decades, it's fairly safe that there's a Briggs bass line on at least one of their records. A self-described street player, Mike's mastery of his instrument truly came from an on-the-job education. The challenges of navigating a lifelong career at the highest level of the recording industry has worn out the most optimistic of spirits. But Mike's unconditional love of the music and the process of creating it has only grown stronger over time. So how does one survive the dream for this long? Well, you're about to find out. In this episode, Mike shares stories from his road trip of a career, the lessons learned in a signed band, the secret to finding inspiration at every turn, and so much more. Your host, Miles McPherson, is here to get the party started. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Mike Brignardello, lovely to have you here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Please, will you start by giving me the story on how you became a session bass player?
Okay, yeah. So I was telling Gio earlier, I grew up in Memphis and just knocked around Memphis and played in bands and stuff like that. And as soon as I graduated from high school, I hit the road, knocked around for 4 or 5 years and came back to Memphis and hooked up with some artists who got record deals, right? And one, a guy named Larry Raspberry, Greg Morrow and I went and did a little record for him on Mercury Records. And I really liked the process of doing all that, being in the studio at Arden Studio down there. Started working with a guy named Keith Sykes, who did a couple of records for him. Same thing. Really just liked the process of doing it. I went out and toured with DeGarmo and Key. While we were in the middle of our tour, we got a call from Amy Grant's management people. She was really young in her career then and wasn't, you know, a big star yet, and said, hey, we want a band to back up this artist we have and come and do a couple of shows in Oklahoma City. We're going to record them and see what happens. So we went out there and did those two gigs with her. They recorded both nights and they got two records out of them. Amy Grant Live Volume 1, Amy Grant Live Volume 2.
Is this pre-Straight Ahead?
Pre-Age to Age, pre-everything.
So you were one of the first bands to ever play with her.
Yes, she didn't have a band, right? And
oh,
yeah, so
my God,
so we came out, and it was a great band. Dana Key, who's passed away, great singer and awesome guitar player, all this stuff. Brown Bannister, her producer, came to sort of ramrod the recording, these live recording sessions, and we hit it off. And he said, "Hey, have you ever thought about trying sessions up in Nashville, maybe?" And I'm like, every day of my life. And so he said, well, come on up. So he sort of mentored me and brought me up here. And because I worked with him, I mean, it just opened every door. I worked on Michael W. Smith and Stephen Curtis Chapman and all those sort of early Christian artists. And the first record that we did for Amy was Age to Age. And it went multi-platinum. It sold, you know, a ton of records. And I thought, man, this is the first record I've done in Nashville. This record business is easy. I just thought,
womp,
what a cakewalk this is. After a while, I started morphing over and doing some of the country stuff, sort of working on that side of the street. Harold Shedd, who ran Mercury Records, just took a liking to me and played on Alabama and K.T. Oslin, all those records from back when, Billy Ray Cyrus even. I did that for about 6 or 7 years. I got a call from Dan Huff, who was living in L.A. at the time. I'd done a bunch of these sessions, a bunch of the Amy Grant sessions and all that stuff with him through the years, and we'd become friends. And he said, hey, I'm going to do this band out in L.A., this, you know, rock band. Would you like to take a swing at that? And so I did. I really did it to work with him. I just wanted to work side by side with him in a band setting. I'd never done that before, and he was just such an unbelievable musician. And so I'd been in a bunch of bands. We'd had record deals that all fizzled. We all thought, you know, got our hopes up and then were crushed and all that stuff when the records did nothing. But I thought, I'm going to take one last swing at this. I thought, you know, whatever, I may roll the dice with my session career, but I'm going to take a swing at this because I just wanted to work with him. And as it turns out, the other guy, other principal in that band was a guy named Alan Pasqua. He's one of the best musicians I've ever worked with in my life. So I moved out there for 5 years. I was out there from like 88 to 93. We lived in England for 3 months making the first record. So it wasn't, you couldn't come back and forth and do sessions and all that stuff. And you know how it is. You step away for 5 years and, well, for me, for 5 minutes and the wheel rolls, right?
Well, any of us for 5 minutes now.
I mean, that's the thing, you know. And so, we all took a mighty swing at it. Man, I have no regrets at all. It was so great for me to work with those two musicians, with Dan and Alan, and to just to see how much I could raise my game to try to hang with those two cats, because they were something else.
At what point did you guys kind of tuck tail and come back and, well, I guess we got to do sessions again?
Well, yeah. I mean,
how did that happen?
It was funny. I'm really good at repressing bad memories. And I've had different people through the years tell me about, oh, don't you remember that last gig you played in such and such? And you guys were backstage going, man, maybe it's time we hang up our spurs and all that. I don't remember any of that, but it was pretty obvious it was coming to an end and all that kind of stuff. And there was no sense in beating, you know, something that just, it was just not the time for it, right? Alan and David both stayed in LA, and then Dan and I came back here, not with the intention of actually getting back in sessions. We wanted to write because we'd, you know, written all this material for the records and all that kind of stuff. So we holed up in Dan's basements and wrote a bunch of stuff and pitched them around. Of course, nothing happened. And we're like, well, that was 6 weeks of no paychecks. Maybe we started thinking about getting back to work. And we sort of stumbled into the session scene. And so we jumped in and that way and rode that way for 20 years. My whole career has been one lucky stumble after the other. If I hadn't been subbing for DeGarmo and Key, you know, just happened to be during that little couple of months in time, whatever, I probably wouldn't be here.
Did you kind of start doing any of the production stuff earlier than too? Or did you always kind of stay in your lane and do the thing?
Yeah, I just stayed in my lane. I really like playing bass. I really like doing that. And, you know, I've done a little, you know, quote, production around the edges and little indie things and stuff like that. When I think about producing records, you know, I think about immediately all my favorite records spring to mind, whatever that would be. You know what I mean? I'm like, ooh, I'd like to do something like this or something like that. When you're starting out, it's nothing like that. Somebody else picks the songs, and maybe you love them, maybe you hate them. Somebody else makes all these other decisions that are out of your control, especially at the beginning. So I'm like, man, I really love playing bass. I'm just going to stick over here, and I'll get a chance to do little things around the edge and any things, and they're more fun. And
that's a wonderful admission.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The Studio Musician Academy was created to make expert mentorship available to every musician who is passionate about making a living with their instrument. Through sharing the lessons we've learned on our journey, we hope to provide you with the resources to blaze your own trail. We'd love to invite you to join the band and check out our training sessions at studiomusicianacademy.com. We have a deep catalog of exclusive bonus content that is free for band members, as well as complete training sessions for many of our guests. Join the band today for free at studiomusicianacademy.com.
I was talking to Craig Young this morning.
A mighty bass player, by the way. I'm really a fan. God.
There are some guys that start taking their pension at 65, and they don't know how to shut it off, but it doesn't seem like they're really into it.
When I first came up here, there were still older guys, and some of them who'd been in the A team and stuff like that, and some of the bigger names and stuff like that. A fair handful of them were not happy to be there. And I was just amazed. I mean, I was Opie from Mayberry in that way. I'm just thinking, we're in the studio. We're making music. You got a guitar hanging around your neck. How bad can this be? We're living the freaking dream.
And that's why I was talking to Craig, because I told him that you basically are Opie from Mayberry. I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if his ultimate dream would just to be to die in the second verse. Just cash out the chips right there in the middle of a take.
Man, you know what? That's not a bad way to go. The thing I love about music is that you're always on the path. You never arrive. My brother, who was in the Marines, a cop, all that stuff, football player, we're complete opposites, right? Called me up one day and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm practicing. He said, what? I said, I'm practicing. He said, why? I'm like, because I need it, pal. And he said, haven't you learned it all by now? Yeah, never. You know, that's the beauty of it, isn't it? When I started out, I mean, I was just scuffled and playing clubs. And I mean, this is just totally living the dream. Period. The thing I like, even when I go to, you know, a demo session where we got to crank out a whole bunch of songs and a little bit of time, I'm so inspired by the the cats in the room. I'm so inspired by the stuff that people can whip off the top of their heads and how well people play. When I listen to country radio, you may not like the song or you may not like the artist or whatever, but man, the cats are giving it hell. I mean, on every record I hear, people here are playing their asses off. Well, it inspires me.
There are some that lose that fire for whatever reason. And I love that you have just never even come close. I feel like you're more excited every new session.
Yeah, when you were as lousy as I was when I started, there's just so much ground to cover.
You've played the same song a few times.
Yes.
You still love to play it.
Yeah. I mean, just like everybody, if I'm not working a whole lot, I'm still going to spend time at the house with stuff and fiddling around and trying this and trying that and different.
Well, you say like everybody, but that's not necessarily true. A lot of people don't. I don't do a damn thing about my instrument when I'm not using it.
But you're working all the time, probably. I'm sure you're working more than I am at this point.
But I'm very intentional about when I'm not working, I'm not working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is why sometimes I lose the fire a little bit, because I'm not doing things to keep it fresh. I'm not doing the maintenance in between to try new things and work on having a different cartridge situation or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you taking that time and practicing and helps to keep it fresh?
Because I think everybody goes through cycles where you know you're sick of your playing or you're tired of it. For me, the way always out is just to practice more or play more. And when I say practice, I don't mean scales and stuff. I've never practiced a scale in my life. I don't even know what a scale is. When you're hot and heavy, you're like one of the top whatever cats, and so you're going to get a lot of work thrown your way. So when you're doing that, you're just trying to keep up with the flood. Like you said, you're backed up right now. You're just trying to keep up with all that stuff. But then later, there's another season where, you're not as busy, and it gives you a chance to, expand and look at other things and stuff like that. I made friends with one of my bass heroes about 3 years ago named Chuck Rainey, and just idolized him my whole life. Got a chance to meet him, and it was sort of through Victor Wooten and that circle. And so it's a whole different circle of cats. And I had a friend of mine encourage me to write a song for Chuck. And I'm like, man, Chuck's not going to play my song, whatever. Anyway, I write this little song, send it to him. He agrees to do it. He comes here to Nashville. We do a little session. The song's called New Year's Day. I've got a couple of videos up out on YouTube. And it was inspired by this dinner that Victor Wooten has every New Year's Day. And he gathers a bunch of people from the music business, but mostly like bass players, because he knows that we don't see each other very much. It's just one bass player on a session, one bass player in a band.
And you guys can't really afford to eat.
No, that's right. So Victor feeds us, and we go out there, and I just met all these people from different. It was so inspiring to see. There were so many different ways to skin the cat to have your musical career and all that. And Victor has been a good example of one of them. He came to Nashville wanting to do sessions, not came to Nashville. That was one of his goals, to do that. But I think he was such a phenom. I think it was just he didn't fit as well as he wanted to in the session world, but he developed his own voice. And
Boy,
he's got a solo career, obviously the Flecktones, all those things that he does. And there's a whole crew of people out there doing the same thing, just their own thing. It really inspired me anyway. So like this song, Chuck comes, we become, we're good mates right now and really good friends and all that. And that just inspired me in looking at Chuck's life, where he came from and all that stuff. So many paths to get here or to get from A to B. Just a lot of inspiration around.
It's contagious, and I don't know if you remember, but one of the first times we finally got to work together was at Legends.
Oh, God. We played a song one night, and you floored me. I was flattened, and I went into the control room not realizing that Dan keeps a live mic on in there, and just gushed all over you and just embarrassed the crap out of myself, and he let me do it for a few minutes.
Well, because Dan's the worst.
Yes, because that's Dan, all right.
Anytime he can make someone uncomfortable, he's so excited.
Mission accomplished, because after I gushed on you, just, oh, man. man, my God, the feel, the pocket. You don't get this with young drummers. You don't understand. I was just going on and on and on. He goes, and he let me go. And he goes, you know, it's a live mic, don't you? I went, I think I dropped an F-bomb and walked out of the room. It was so embarrassing, but so true. I mean, every word of it.
Well, and so, first of all, my God, thank you. And you know, it's, even if we do get compliments, we don't hear them. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And often we get them from people that we don't have a lot of respect for.
Right.
And I don't say that in a shitty way, but you know, when somebody refers to you for 3 hours as Mr. Drums and says, hey man, can you play the cymbal drum on the snare tom over on the thing? And then at the end of it, they're like, man, you're so fucking good, dude. And you're like, oh, yeah. Cool. Thanks. It's hard for us to hear compliments when you get to a level where you're kind of like, you're rubbing elbows with all the dudes. It's kind of uncool to be like, man, that was really fucking cool you did. You know, so a lot of us don't do that. So when that happened, my first reaction was, oh God, somebody shut that fucking mic off right now.
It's embarrassing.
Because I mean, you don't want to hear it, and especially because normally when we hear it, it's from people that you don't want to hear it from.
Right.
But then I heard it, and then years later, I processed it, and I realized that it was the first time that somebody that I actually looked up to was honest about my playing, and I got to hear it.
Oh, my gosh.
And it meant the world to me.
Oh, well.
And as a result, I don't do great song, great day, you know, because often it's not. It's
right.
not a great song.
Right.
It might have been a killer chorus, or it wasn't a great day. But, you know, when a player does something that catches my ear, I tell them now.
Yeah.
I make sure the talk back is on, and I make sure that there is time to let them know that I noticed that they cared and gave a shit and tried something.
Yeah.
It was cool.
I'll point out another session to you. We were doing something over at Omni. It was some, you know, a limited pressing, a little, you know, custom project. You did a take. It was a great take. And you said, hey, wait a minute. You said, I wanted to go back and punch in the bridge or something like that, because something that the acoustic guitar player was doing, he had a rhythm that you caught, and you altered this little tom thing that you had done in the bridge to match that rhythm. And I thought, wow. I mean, that was that really, really, that one little thing, because it was just a limited pressing session that you've forgotten about, that was fine just the way you left it or would have left it. And you took the time. It's like you were listening, you were thinking, you were being creative. It's just like, to me, kind of when it doesn't matter, that's when it's really impressive.
Can we have him on the podcast every time? Do we have to have other guests? They're not as nice to me as he is.
You could be listening to any podcast in the world, but right now you're here with us, and we want to thank you for listening. We created this community to make expert mentorship available to every musician who is passionate about making a living doing what they love. Do you know someone who would enjoy this podcast? If so, we'd be grateful if you could hit that share button and spread the good word on the Studio Musician Academy. If you're not part of the band yet, you can grab your free account today at studiomusicianacademy.com. Thank you for listening. Now back to the show.
Does it ever feel like work? Do you think you're going to get to a point where you're like,
No, I think the only time.
Are you going to die during the second verse?
I'm going to die during the second verse. At least I hope so. I mean, I swear to God, I think that would be a killer way to go. No pun intended. The only thing that I don't enjoy now is when I've been miscast. I'm not a good reader. I've got no training. I've got no schooling. I call myself a street player. I'm kind of that, seat of the pants. I get a call to come and do The State. It was a famous song that I love. We're going to do a remake of this. And they've given it to an arranger who's written everybody off the page. And I know some cats can chew that up and spit it out and all that stuff, but nobody in that room that day, and least of all me. That's a session I left fairly unhappy about. The vision I had is, as the door was slamming behind me, they were on the phone getting somebody else. That's not too pleasant. But anything else, I mean, the stuff that I normally get called for, the stuff that comes in, you know, over the wire, so to speak, you know, I'll like that stuff.
You're one of the ones that have been in what I would consider the mainstream session scene for maybe the longest of your, I mean, there's not a lot of you guys that didn't kind of veer off here or there, like that just kept going.
Yeah.
My dad's one too.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that you wish you would have learned earlier?
This is going to sound so cynical, and I don't mean it that way, but I think the thing that I had to learn, I've always put a really high value on loyalty. Then the music business doesn't value that. I've made several career choice errors because of my misguided belief in loyalty. Somebody had booked me for a week of double scale, and then somebody else called me for another week of double scale. And I felt I should be loyal to the first client who booked me, right? So I stayed loyal to them and turned down the other opportunity. I did that record with client A, turned down client B. Well, the artist in client B went on to have a massive career, and he used that band that went down to do the session for him for like 5 years. And they did all of these huge hit records. Producer A that I honored, I did that record. He never called me again, ever. That decision cost me, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? Just, you know, and it was just in my misguided sense of loyalty. I should have just made the career choice and let the chips fall where they may and done that. And I've done that a few times.
That's hard. And I don't know that it's a place that everybody needs to get to, but I know that it's a place that's been very helpful for me as a perspective that is simply this. If I were to play on everything, it would suck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, right. We've got so many great guys in this town.
Right.
And sometimes they're playing on something that would be better suited for me. And there's right. going to be plenty of times where I am the dumbass that's there and they should absolutely be there. So, you know, it's just a little more comforting for me to just to take solace in knowing that when somebody goes, man, I've used that guy for 20 years and there's no other reason for me to use someone else other than I just haven't. And when an artist comes to that realization or a producer or whatever, I have a hard time not applauding them.
Right.
Even when it's me that's getting the axe, it's
right,
like,
right. Well, and I totally get that. I mean, the wheel never stops turning. I get that. And the whole idea of, you know, let's young up the band, you know, that phrase and all that kind of stuff. And everybody, I think for me, I just look back and think I made choices for the wrong reasons. It wasn't not that the inevitability, the things are going to change. I understand that. Yeah, I'll be loyal and then that'll come back. It's like, no, I don't think so. Not so much. A lot of these decisions are made by somebody else and all that kind of stuff. I think that's one of the reasons I like sticking to bass playing, because I know all this junk about the music business and I just don't want that to be part of my daily life.
I feel more comfortable knowing that you care more about what's happening on this side of the glass than what's happening on that side
right,
of the glass.
Right. Because we can't control that.
No, we can't. And the problem is when, especially as a drummer, when you have a bass player that's thinking about anything that's going on in there separate from what we're working on, that's hard. And you are the perfect example of the ally that guys like us need.
Well, I view it definitely that way. I think there is this bifurcation, if you will, one side of the glass and the other. And we're all this team out here on the floor. We're the band of brothers for today. And so we're going to war through this battle, good, bad, or ugly, together. You know what I mean? And they're going to do whatever they do in there. We have no control of that. How many times have you had the take of your life and they immediately say, oh, let's do another one? You want to go, weren't you listening? And maybe they were, maybe they weren't. They might have been on the phone. You know what I mean? But again, we can't control that. Every one of us who've you know, come to this spot have learned how to shift that gear and not get all torqued out when they say, let's do another take. And now I think they like it just because of the sort of the data harvesting nature of production these days. They want you to play it differently through every single time so they can have choices later and all that stuff, which is pretty weird to me. I'm not sure, you know, typically these parts have a flow to them, a beginning, middle, and end, right? And you're trying to build these things a certain way. And when people come and chop that all up later, they may or may not get it.
And some do, but let's also be honest. Like, first of all, those guys know that we're not going to leave a top playlist that's got a bunch of bullshit
right,
in it.
Right.
Even if we're doing 20 playlists just to give options or whatever, whenever they open that session, it's going to be good.
Right.
That top playlist right. on every player is going to be clean and ready to go.
Right.
And I bet most of them just pull it up and go with it. And the times that we're spending where they're going, hey, let's just get another take, is because they've got somebody really excited behind them thinking that they're producing.
Wow. And, you know, I never thought about it like that. Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
And I'm saying that is, you know, maybe yeah. one out of 10 times or whatever, but yeah. there's so many factors.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just yeah. so goofy.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Yeah. The final playlist. Yeah. That'll better be good.
I can't thank you enough, first of all, for being here. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
For doing this. But thank you for just enjoying what it is that we get to do, so much so that it reminds those of us that have sometimes forgotten that it's fucking awesome.
It is. I'm and totally living the dream.
Your love for it is so contagious. So
well,
thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you made it this far, so I'm guessing you're probably either asleep or hopefully enjoying the conversation. If you haven't joined the band yet, there's a free account waiting for you at studiomusicianacademy.com. But that's not all. Since you're still here with us, we'd love to offer you a podcast fan discount on any individual learning session or full catalog subscription on studiomusicianacademy.com. Just use the code PODCAST to check out.